All right, coming up here in the rest of hour number two, we're going to be joined by Ross Greenberg and Victor Green. Before we get to Ross, I want to give a shout out to our friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. Folks, please help support a wonderful cause that's taking care of the guys who left so much of themselves out on the field. These are the guys who had to play back when they still had to get off-season jobs to support themselves and their families. It's organizations like this one that was started by Mike Ditka, again, the Gridiron Greats, that are out there trying to help the guys that we all grew up watching and reading about. Please go online to gridirongreats.org to see how you can get involved. All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is Ross Greenberg. Ross spent 33 years at HBO. He served as their vice president and executive producer of HBO Sports from 1985 to 1990, senior vice president and executive producer from 1990 to 2000, and president of HBO Sports from 2000 to 2011. He now heads his own company, Ross Greenberg Productions. He's won over 100 major television awards, including 54 Sports Emmys, 21 Cable Ace Awards, 12 Golden Eagle Awards, plus 5 Monitor Awards and 8 Peabody's. And we're excited that he is back with us again tonight here on TNT. Hey, Ross, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, Ross.
Good to be with both of you guys. How you been?
Excellent.
Oh, fantastic. Ross, how about you? How are things going at the production company?
Really well. We're, you know, it's nonstop. We just got through following Quest for the Stanley Cup. So we followed all the teams that went through those wild playoffs and got to see Alex Ovechkin up close and, winning that first Stanley Cup. It was very emotional and seventh episode was pretty incredible. We did it for ESPN Plus and first time I had delivered product to ESPN. So that was quite an enjoyable, 7 weeks.
Ross, when we do a show on the golf side next on the tee, and you've been involved in a lot of different golf projects. You've been partnering with the USGA for a long time. The golfing world is just now starting to settle down after this U.S. Open. I wanted to get your thoughts, right? Is the USGA, are they in crisis at this point? Or is the things that we are seeing because of the course setup, is that being overblown, do you think, a little bit?
Well, it's overblown a little bit. I wish they would pay a little less attention to, you know, course management and a little bit more attention to marketing and promoting their event. I haven't done a documentary for them in a couple of years, and I think that, you know, the Masters has done such a great job of marketing their tournament. They seem to kind of capture all the digital and all the historic reference on that tournament. And yes, they have an advantage because it's played, you know, at Augusta every year and the U.S. Open travels. But still, the history of the USGA needs to come to the fore a little bit more. They need to kind of look into their past and glorify what is an incredible history. And I think they can market and do a little bit better job of, you know, getting Fox to start, you know, paying a little bit more attention to marketing promotion and also digital distribution. There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to follow, you know, the select threesomes, like you can at the Masters. And I think that this course management situation and Mike Davis, you know, that's his forte and he's the executive director of the USGA and runs the tournament. And I think, you know, he just has to make more note of how high the grass needs to be and how fast those greens need to be and what the weather is and what the wind is going to do to these courses. And just kind of played a little bit more conservative. It's not the end of the world if someone is 8 under and wins the tournament. I started my career, ironically, at Wingfoot in 1974 when Hale Irwin won the tournament at 7 over par. I don't remember, you know, the kind of crazed outlook on that. You know, I remember how deep the rough was and how tough the course was. But none of the players really complained about the fairness. They got beaten up, but you just don't. I don't remember, you know, greens out of control and things like that.
And to that end, Ross, I think that when you look at the complete package around the USGA, and you mentioned Fox, I mean, I think there's been some outcry that, you know, it's tough, you know, listening to Fox and the folks that they've got doing the tournament. Then you've got the issue with the conditions of the fairways and the greens, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And then you've got the players sort of coming out. It seems like there's this whole halo right now around the U.S. Open and around the USGA. It's just an air of negativity. If it were you, how do you get all of that aside and then get back to, hey, this is a golf tournament. This is a major. We should be celebrating, to your point, the history of the U.S. Open and the USGA. And we got to get away from all of this black cloud stuff.
You're right. I mean, I that's why I think that they have to concentrate more on the history of the championship. They don't like to call it a tournament, though, by the way. I was taught that in my first year working with them. They don't like that word tournament. But you know, you're right. I mean, I think if you can concentrate on the history, then you can create that beautiful halo instead of this negative cloud that seems to be surfacing every year with the championship. So I really do think that if you kind of capture the hearts and minds of people around the country and concentrate on the great, you know, challenges by the greats of the game, you know, the Dustin Johnsons and the Rory McIlroys and the Tiger Woods now and Jordan Spieth, you can kind of get this back to where it should be. You know, they always talk about that championship as the ultimate challenge, and if you win that tournament or championship, then you've captured the toughest championship to kind of win, even amongst the majors. But it's not just about the challenge of the golf course. It's about, you know, the wonderful 100-year history of this great U.S. Open.
Ross, you've done so many fantastic documentaries, and one of the ones you've done more recently, back in 2016, was one for Showtime about Lawrence Phillips called Running for His Life. And he was a guy that had a lot of issues, you know, throughout his life, and with domestic violence issues in college, and continued on when he turned pro in the NFL. He once passed out on the Rams practice field, potentially due to alcohol. I think, you know, some folks were saying that they smelled alcohol on his breath. And Dick Vermeil once said he might have been the best running back that he ever coached if he could have just stayed out of trouble. And then we ultimately know he ended up going to jail. He killed a cellmate and then committed suicide shortly thereafter. But I'm curious, you know, what did you guys learn about Lawrence Phillips and his life when you guys were putting this documentary together?
Well, at first, you know, we learned quite a bit, obviously. It was a difficult life. He never really had a chance. At first, when we started the project, frankly, we were thinking that he might have been railroaded on quite a few of those charges. But as we looked into it deeper and deeper, we found just a very difficult person who had endured quite a bit and couldn't overcome, you know, a lot of demons. And that's really what happened. I mean, and, you know, we wanted to kind of explain his prowess as a running back. It wasn't just Dick Vermeil. You know, Nick Saban also got his head handed to him in a game against Lawrence Phillips and called him the best running back he had ever seen at the collegiate level. And that's Nick Saban. You know, so I have to say it was a difficult project to do, but I think some good could come out of it. You know, we looked hard at the foster care system, the penal system, the, you know, everything that he went through, and, you know, whether it was an alcohol abuse and domestic violence and a lot of troublesome issues, that have brought down a lot of athletes and a lot of sports. And, you know, we really wanted to focus on why, you know, and it's a question you can never answer. You know, unfortunately, there's just so many intermingling aspects to his life that it's just unfortunate. But but there's so many questions about his life and death that you can't answer.
Bob, questions for Ross?
It's great to speak with you again, Ross. And I always, when I think about HBO Sports, I was a huge boxing fan back in the days, mm-hmm. especially in the 90s. You guys mm-hmm. were award-winning, and you know, everything you did, I've been able to talk with Barry Tompkins at length and mm-hmm. had so many great experiences watching HBO in the earlier days. But the sport of boxing, and you're the guy to speak with, Ross. I mean, I've lost a lot of interest. I can't really put a total hand on it. You know, I don't know if it was a combination of the popularity of the MMA now, the absence, or if Don King did something, or the absence of guys like Tyson. I think over the years, so many things have happened to that sport, but I just don't see the interest that it once had. I know it's not something you could talk about in one or two sentences, but give me your thoughts about the current state of the sport.
Lack of stars. The sweet science has been lost as an art form. You know, you mentioned the 90s, but let me tell you something. I started with HBO in 78 and really started producing boxing events in the late 70s and through the 80s. And talk about the heyday of the sport. You know, Leonard Hearns, Hagler Duran, and Tyson emerging, and Holmes in his prime, and I mean, it was spectacular. And, you know, there was an art to the sport. And I'll give you a wild thing that I thought about that you should think about over the last week. I don't know why this popped into my head, but I told Steven Espinosa at Showtime, maybe there's a theory that the UFC has actually turned the boxing fan into a fan who lusts for violence and brutality, rather than the sweet science and the art of boxing. And maybe that has actually hurt the sport as much as anything else. But I will say this. Over, you know, I cannot release blame. I allowed promoters to short-sightedly put fights in pay-per-view that garnered all of 200,000 buys, which means that the best and most significant sporting events in boxing were happening in front of 200,000 eyeballs in homes. And that hurt the sport more than anything else in the 90s and into the 2000s, when the average sports fan was asked to decide on whether he or she should plunk down $50 to $60 in order to watch a fight. That might have crippled the sport, because the promoters made a lot of money, and indeed some of the boxers made some money, but at the end of the day, that was short-term grabbing, and in the long run, it might have really damaged the sport. Because what happened was, you can't create stars when they're only appearing in front of a couple hundred thousand viewers. And then when you have the big ones, whether it's a De La Hoya fight or into the Mayweather era, you know, and Pacquiao, what happened was, you know, they were fighting once or twice a year. And of course, Mayweather was taking off a year or two now and then when he was in his quote retirement. So what you had was the major superstars really, you know, making $100 million a fight and not needing to fight more than once or twice a year. So all of a sudden, there was a dearth of big fights. And that's where we are today. We have very few major sports stars in boxing. And what I mean by that is the mainstream sports star. You know, you can count them on one hand and maybe three fingers.
Yeah.
Pacquiao happens to still be fighting, so you have to include him, but do you guys realize that he's fighting in a couple weeks or something? And do you know that?
No.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's fighting. I don't know when he's fighting, but it's soon. And, you know, there are certain networks like ESPN trying to revive it. But they're trusting promoters who have selfish interests and aren't really looking out for the health of the sport in the long run.
And Ross, before I let you go, I wanted to get your, I think we brought this up in the past, but you've had the honor to work with Bob Costas. That's one of the men that Chris and I have always looked up to, one of the more incredibly well-versed journalist I've ever been around, and we share the same birthday, so I always have a soft spot for the guy. But give us your more thoughts about this guy, his talent, and what he meant to HBO and others over the years.
Oh, he meant so much to everything. I mean, you know, NBC, HBO, everywhere he's touched. Now Major League Baseball. You know, the thing about Bob that's very unique is he was like a, you know how they talk about baseball players having all five of the categories, you know, defense, hitting, running the base pass, the five tools. Bob has the five tools of broadcasting. There's never been another broadcaster who has the art of play-by-play down, is the ultimate host, can interview anyone on any subject and, you know, ask the questions that you want asked from your living room couch. I mean, there's never been a broadcaster like him, and he's so incredibly smart, has a, you know, photographic mind. It's just an unbelievable talent that I don't think we'll see the likes of again, you know. I mean, look, I was a big Cosell fan growing up, and Jim McKay, you know, but Bob just combines all of them in one broadcaster. I just have the ultimate respect. Hopefully we'll work together again. I can't wait for the day.
Ross, before we let you go, what projects are you currently working on?
Well, I'm working on getting a college football team for Showtime, and that's not been easy, but we're hopeful that we can follow a team like we did Navy last year, had a really successful season of it. And also I'm going to get back in the saddle with the NHL, hopefully on Road to the Winter Classic. And then I have a couple of surprise documentaries that I can't tell you about that I'm working on that are very exciting. We'll see where they end up, but I can't get over, you know, I guess I can't retire yet. I love this game too much. It just takes, you know, it's just fun still. And I've got a great group with me, working with me, some of the best in the business, the shooters, the editors, the writers, you know, the Aaron Cohns and the Steve Stern producers. And we just have a lot of fun, and we love to create, you know, this product. I'm going to call the USGA, though. You gave me that. I forgot that I needed to call Sarah Hirschland and remind her. Because she had called me about 3 or 4 months ago talking about doing some historic documentaries again for the USGA, but we need to light that fire. So
there
when
you
I get
go.
Off the phone
and,
with
and
you, maybe I should call her.
Speaking of Sarah Hirschland, I believe her husband is Keith Hirschland, who is a great friend of ours over on the golf side. So, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of fun doing some docus, you know. I spent a day with Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer at Oakmont. I'll never forget that day when we relived the 62 U.S. Open. So,
well, Ross, it is an incredible privilege every time we get to spend some time with you and a million questions that Bob and I have. We hope you'll come back and join us again real soon to update us on what you're working on and then go through some of the other things, because I'd love to revisit that conversation and the documentary you did about the 62 U.S. Open with you.
Sure, you've got it. Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot.
It's always fun. Thanks.
Take care, Ross.
Okay.
All the best to you and your family.
Thank you.
That is the great Ross Greenberg, again, former president of HBO Sports, now running his own production company. And Bob, you want to talk about a guy who's the king of the documentary? It's got to be Ross Greenberg.
But he's been very fortunate. He'll be the first to tell you he's worked with some giants in the business. So when you put talent like his together with other people that share that same kind of passion, it's magic. And we're honored to speak with him, Chris.
Yes, we are. All right, we've got our next guest, Victor Green, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Victor right on the other side of this quick station break.